All right, Clifford, we're back for the second half here. Should be good.
The second half of The Tale of Beren and Luthien.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. What have you thought so far?
I've been very impressed. As we said last time, the level of epicness in the stories from Silmarillion are very high relative to Lord of the Rings.
I know. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
It's... That's a great quality about it. Mm-hmm. That's what I love in my stories, whether in book form or on the movie screen. You want to give us like a quick like Cliff's Notes of what we've already covered?
Yeah. So hopefully you listened to the episode before this, because this episode won't make any sense unless you do. But we're
right at the crucial part here. Like, I mean, now we're like getting to the climax. So go listen to the other one.
Yes. First. Yes, absolutely. We've been talking about Beren and Luthien. Beren is a man. His father was a pretty important man. One of a handful of warriors fighting against Morgoth, the bad guy up in the north in Angband. And Sauron is one of the helpers of Morgoth at this point. The Sauron from Lord of the Rings. Sauron killed Beren's father. Beren escaped and became kind of I'll call him a cowboy, living out in the wilderness alone. Luthien is an elf, the daughter of Thingol, a very important elf in the hidden city of... Hidden Kingdom of Doriath. So you've heard from us before about the hidden city of Gondolin, and elsewhere in this story, the hidden city of Nargothrond comes up. So there's a handful of these hidden fortresses that the elves run. Luthien is described by the story as the most beautiful elf ever to walk the earth, and her father's a big, important guy. Beren, in his wanderings, comes across Luthien in the forest, falls in love with her, basically can't find her, and after months of wandering and catching glimpses of her, finally they cross paths, and they fall in love. And we hear right away that Luthien is doomed to be tied to Beren's fate. From that moment onwards, the story is pretty complicated from here. But basically, Luthien takes Beren home, introduces her to her dad. He thinks this guy's a joke and is like, "Nice try. Bring me one of the Cimmerils, which is one of the most important. It's what the Cimmerillion's named after. The most important gems for the elves. These have the light of the two trees from Valinor, forged by." Fëanor?
Yes. Nice, right? Nice.
Forged by Fëanor. So this is a big deal. And right now these three Cimmerils live in the crown of Morgoth. And Morgoth has just gone on the offensive after a 400-year siege. So this is a death mission, no matter how you cut it. So it's kind of a joke from Thingol. And he thinks this is how he gets rid of his daughter's boyfriend. But his wife, who's got some all-seeing vision, warns him that he's either doomed his daughter or his family, right?
Right.
Listen to the last part for all the twists and turns. But they set off and basically set out to get the Cimmerils. Beren is undaunted, and they run into some trouble with two sons of Fëanor, who are sworn to basically kill anyone who tries to take the Cimmerils, even though you'd think they're on the same side. At this point, though, they've escaped many perils and challenges, and...
Wait, you gotta mention the dog.
Well, yeah, there's the dog. This was the dog that was one of Fëanor's son's dog, hunting dog. He's an amazing dog. Juan is his name. He killed a whole bunch of amazingly powerful werewolves, and then Sauron took the form of a wolf, and Juan beat him in battle, which is amazing. Yeah. This is the Sauron from Lord of the Rings, and this dog beat him.
Oh, yeah.
So they've got this dog by their side, and now they've taken the form Luthien of a bat and Beren of a wolf, and they're making their way north to Angband.
Yeah, so we're coming to, like, we're going to just jump in here, and this is the big time. Like, this is the epic climax of the story coming up here. I think with that, we should jump in. You ready?
Okay, yes.
All right, let's go.
Thank you.
we had left them, they were near that tower that Finrod had died in, that Sauron was commanding, where Luthien freed Beren and Juan helped and everything, and that's where they got the carcasses that they're disguised as. So from there, they got across a desert, and at the north end of this desert is Thangorodrim, which is basically, like, it seems like kind of three volcanoes, like, right on the edge of this huge mountain range that's, like, just goes into, like, everlasting north where it's always cold and icy and everything. But
Thangorodrim and Angband are the same thing,
right,
for everyone listening.
Yeah, and underneath that is, like, just hundreds of miles of tunnels full of, like, evil places, and, like, this is, like, the headquarters for Morgoth. And, yeah, so that... all that is Angband. So they ride across or run across, fly across, you know, whatever they're doing, across the desert, and they come to the gates of Angband. And since we're just starting, you want to read that scary description of the smoke fumes?
Black chasms opened beside the road, whence forms as of writhing serpents issued. On either hand, the cliffs stood as embattled walls, and upon them sat carrion fowl, crying with fell voices. Before them was the impregnable gate, an arch wide and dark at the foot of the mountain. Above it reared 1,000 feet of precipice.
Oh, all right. So, yeah, so we're at the evil castle now, for sure, right? So Morgoth had heard about Juan in the past, and he had devised a plan if Juan ever came.
He chose one from among the whelps of the race of Drogluin, and he fed him with his own hand upon living flesh, and put his power upon him. Swiftly the wolf grew, until he could creep in no den, but lay huge and hungry before the feet of Morgoth. There the fire and anguish of hell entered into him, and he became filled with a devouring spirit, tormented, terrible, and strong. Karkaroth, the Red Maw, he is named in the tales of those days, and Angfaglir, the Jaws of Thirst. And Morgoth set him to lie unsleeping before the doors of Angband, lest Juan come.
Okay, so that's pretty creepy too. You pick the best pup, and you feed him living flesh for a time, just so that you can go beat this dog. And this is what's guarding the gates to this most evil castle.
And remind us, why is Morgoth so concerned with making a dog to go up against Juan?
There's a prophecy that the strongest and mightiest wolf that ever lived will kill Juan. And of course, Sauron thought if he took wolf form, he would be, but he wasn't.
embarrassing, yeah, for a big guy, Sauron.
So another plan was needed, and this is what Morgoth has ready for him. Of course, Juan's not with him right now, so who knows? Anyways, who knows what's going to happen? Anyways, they come up to him.
Beren and Luthien.
Yeah, they come up to Karkaroth here, and Karkaroth's extremely skeptical about them because he's just like, he had heard Dragluin died, and so he's not going to let him pass, but then all of a sudden...
But suddenly some power, descended from of old from the divine race, possessed Luthien, and casting back her foul raiment, she stood forth, small before the might of Karkaroth, but radiant and terrible. Lifting up her hand, she commanded him to sleep.
And so he does... And then begins the epic quest down into the fortress.
Then Beren and Luthien went through the gate and down the labyrinthine stairs, and together wrought the greatest deed that has been dared by elves or men. For they came to the seat of Morgoth in his nethermost hall that was upheld by horror, lit by fire, and filled with weapons of death and torment. There Beren slunk in wolf's form beneath his throne, and Luthien was stripped of her disguise by the will of Morgoth, and he bent his gaze upon her. She was not daunted by his eyes, and she named her own name, and offered her service to sing before him, after the manner of a minstrel. Then Morgoth, looking upon her beauty, conceived in his thought an evil lust, and a design more dark than any that had yet come into his heart since he fled from Valinor. Thus he was beguiled by his own malice, for he watched her, leaving her free for a while and taking secret pleasure in his thought. Then suddenly she eluded his sight, and out of the shadows began a song of such surpassing loveliness, of such blinding power, that he listened perforce. And a blindness came upon him as his eyes roamed to and fro seeking her. All his court were cast down in slumber, and all the fires faded and were quenched. But the simarils in the crown on Morgoth's head blazed forth suddenly with a radiance of white flame. And the burden of that crown and of the jewels bowed down his head, as though the world were set upon it, laden with a weight of care, of fear, and of desire, that even the will of Morgoth could not support. Then Luthien, catching up her winged robe, sprang into the air, and her voice came dropping down like rain into pools, profound and dark. She cast her cloak before his eyes, and set upon him a dream, dark as the outer void where once he walked alone. Suddenly he fell, as a hill sliding in avalanche, and hurled like thunder from his throne, lay prone upon the floors of hell. The iron crown rolled echoing from his head. All things were still.
Damn. That's pretty good. That was... it's just some of the, like, the lines and descriptions in here. It's like, and together they wrought the greatest deed ever that has ever been dared by elves and men. It's just like, all right, straight up, okay, this is the biggest thing that's ever been accomplished.
Yes.
Yes. You know? And then, like, again, it's like you get to this point and you're just like, wow, man, how are they ever going to do this? But I mean, they're in the middle of it. They're doing it, you know? And, like, mm-hmm. And the descriptions are, like, Morgoth, like, as a hill sliding in an avalanche as he falls down onto the floor. It's just like, these, what you're saying, like, yeah, it's the epicest of epic possible. But let's finish off this. Let's keep going with this section here, too.
Okay.
So, Luthien's song actually puts Beren to sleep as well, but Luthien can just wake him up by her touch. And so then from there, you know, it's Beren's quest. So he's the one, he takes out the knife of Angrist, which is the knife that he stole from Curufin when he, you know, throttled him and almost killed him. From the iron claws that held it, he cut a Silmaril. So he's holding a Silmaril in his hand and it begins to glow. And I think this is noteworthy because there's other instances where, like, if you grab a Silmaril and you're not, like, rightfully allowed to take it, then it starts burning your hand. Like, I think there's even, like, a section where Morgoth grabbed him and, like, he just started yelling because they were burning his hand so bad that that whole land just always has an echo permanently from the yelling.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so now here's another key thing too. At this point, Bryn's just like, well, you know, now that we're here and we got one, why don't we just take all three and let's, you know, finish this thing off. And then
right, the crown's lying right there.
Right. But what happens?
But such was not the doom of the Silmarils. The knife Angrist snapped, and a shard of the blade, flying, smote the cheek of Morgoth. He groaned and stirred, and all the host of Angband moved in sleep.
So Beren and Luthien book it out of there at this point. And after that, it seems everyone's still asleep until they come to the gate, because her song had put, like, the whole fortress to sleep, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But Karkaroth had awoken, and when they get out there, he immediately attacks him.
Luthien was spent, and she had not time nor strength to quell the wolf. But Beren strode forth before her, and in his right hand he held aloft the Silmaril. Karkaroth halted, and for a moment was afraid. "Get you gone and fly," cried Beren, "for here is a fire that shall consume you, and all evil things." And he thrust the Silmaril before the eyes of the wolf. But Karkaroth looked upon that holy jewel and was not daunted. And the devouring spirit within him awoke to sudden fire. And gaping, he took suddenly the hand within his jaws, and he bit it off at the wrist. Then swiftly all his innards were filled with a flame of anguish, and the Silmaril seared his accursed flesh. Howling, he led before them, and the walls of the valley of the gate echoes with the clamor of his torment. So terrible did he become in his madness that all the creatures of Morgoth that abode in that valley, and were upon any of the roads that led hither, fled far away, for he slew all living things that stood in his path, and burst forth from the north with ruin upon the world. Of all the terrors that came ever into Beleriand ere Angband's fall, the madness of Karkaroth was the most dreadful, for the power of the Silmaril was hidden within him.
Okay, so this is, like, another example where it's like, okay, Karkaroth now has the Silmaril, and he wasn't supposed to, like, he didn't have, like, a right to one, so it's, like, burning inside of him, and it's driving him crazy. And, of course, you know, again, with the epicness, it's like, okay, this was the worst thing that ever came out of the north, you know, like, the single worst thing that ever came. You know, it's like, there's dragons that have come out, but it's this mighty wolf that, like, in this
mad
super
dog
rage. Yeah, that's the worst. So at this point, so, of course, what we just heard, Beren was holding the Silmaril in his hand, like, and guarding Luthien, but Karkaroth just bites his hand with the Silmaril, eats the whole hand, and so Beren's wrist is, like, you know, bleeding out. And so Beren swoons because the fangs, I guess, Karkaroth's fangs, I guess, had venom in them. And so Luthien sucks out the poison, apparently, and then uses her healing powers. You know, again, these are just details that just get brushed over.
Mm-hmm.
But now all the armies of Angband were waking up at this point, too, so it's like, oh, shoot, now they're in trouble. You know, but all of a sudden, who would have thought the eagles come and pick them up just out of... It sounds like Huan had tipped them off to be on guard that, you know, there was something happening out there. So the Eagles come down, bring him. The Eagles bring him back to where they had set out from after the Sons of Feanor had attacked him. So, like, in the woods kind of near Doriath, but not the Doriath woods itself.
Okay.
So, you know, kind of out of convenience, I think, Juan's already there again. And he comes and they heal Bryn together again. Sounds a lot like the same way they healed him after Curufin had shot him. And then after lots of nursing, he finally wakes up again. And from that point on, he's known as Bryn Urkamian. I think Urkamian. Urkamian, after that, which means the one-handed.
Okay.
All right. So what did we think about this most epic of epic parts?
So, I mean, one thing is like that it happens super fast.
Like, yeah, well, I mean it's brushed through because, like, what we were saying, this is the prose version as opposed to like the lyrical lay thing that would probably take forever.
Right. But regardless, super impressive. Bryn and Luthien more or less stroll into this fortress.
Well, they put everybody to sleep and then they can.
Yeah, die. Yeah. Which is I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. I've seen that come up in mythology quite a bit. Is like the concept of like the bad guys falling asleep or something, or like the enchanting sleep to slip past the guards.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know an example off the top of my head, but yeah, I'm sure you could draw on something there.
Well, I was also going to say it's worth noting that Luthien is the one who's really driving this.
Exactly. That's the cool part of the story. This is what I was saying before. It's like, okay, the guy and the girl pull equal weight here. This is why it's excellent. You know, like they get the balance perfect in this story. Because, you know, when they're coming out, though, it's Bryn that's trying to defend her. Actually, what's kind of funny is, like, Bryn, before he meets Luthien, is, like, a total tank and, like, indestructible. But then when he does meet her, he starts doing, like, I don't know. He gets in trouble more easily and, like, you know, gets hurt a bunch. Like, you know,
yeah, he's gotten shot. Yeah, I was going to say, this is almost, it's almost like a... Not I wouldn't say comic relief, but almost Bryn is like the comically like overly like kind of macho dude who strolls up and immediately gets knocked down by the enemy before Luthien has to use some real deft and skill to save the day. And then Bryn kind of wakes back up from his slumber and is like, "What'd you do to me?" Like, and runs right back into the face of danger.
It's all right. You can kind of fall for that, but it's not quite that, because it's like it specifically says when they come out and they see Karkaros already woken up. It's just like, well, Luthien's already spent like all her power, she's used it up, like she's very tired right now, and so it's like, well, Bryn has to do something, and it's like, okay, he can't do much because this wolf's a giant like terror, but you know what he can do, he does, you know, and just so happens that, okay, I guess he just eats my hand with the Silmaril, which is what we came for.
But well, so should we dwell for a second on why Luthien was spent? I mean, how crazy it was that she was able to enchant the entire Angband to sleep and fool Morgoth?
Yeah, well, what do you think about it? Like, I mean, do you not think that's believable, or?
Oh, I mean, in the context of this mythology, it's believable. It was a twist that I wasn't expecting.
Okay.
You know, yeah. It immediately, you'd think that they're going to be doing battle to fight their way into the fortress. And instead, it's a lot of stealth. And then Morgoth thinks he has them. And he basically is, like, lusting after Luthien in such a way that he puts down his guard.
Well, I think, all right, I don't think it would be as, like, stealthy as, like, you know, it would kind of feel like, if we had a full version, it would feel like the underground running scenes that you see in Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit. We haven't encountered one in Lord of the Rings, but like, you know, when The Hobbit, when the dwarves are running around in the mountains of Moria with Gandalf away from like the goblins and everything, I feel like it would kind of feel like that, you know, as they're just, but this time, instead of just running out as fast as they can, they're running all the way to the depths of the fortress first, which is like suspenseful. It's like, yeah, the story goes too quick, so we don't quite feel it, but this is where, like, I don't know, anybody's imagination, the power of that comes out, you know, and you can kind of just imagine your own version of this, which is like a little nice, you know. But then again, it's like okay, Luthien's just singing a song, which is, I wouldn't say that's like anticlimactic at all. I think that's cool. And then of course we've already seen that she was doing some powerful magical things, and it's like, well, if any elf can, it would be the one who's a daughter of a Maia, you know.
Right, some ways it makes sense that it's not a straight out battle, because in terms of strength, they're so outnumbered, they're so overwhelmed. And so it makes sense that it's like this challenge of kind of like beauty and wonder and magic, almost.
Yeah.
Is where it becomes a fairer field, maybe.
They made the point, Tolkien and the Great War, John Garth, the author, that he was saying, this is the first example of how the wheels of the world are often turned not by the lords and the governors or the gods, but by the seemingly unknown and weak, you know? So it's like, okay, so the two little, what's the word, underdogs come, mm-hmm. and they wrought the greatest deed that elves men have ever done.
It's like,
that's great. I mean, like, yeah, how is this not awesome, you know? This is fun, mm-hmm. you know? I don't know how you can't like this story based off that, just that alone, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was kind of interesting, too, because there's the original story. I think we'll cover this at some point. This is kind of, like, ironic because it kind of sounds like when Morgoth, he was captured in Valinor, but then he was, like, put on house arrest because, like, for good...
This is way back in the beginning.
Yeah, way back. So he was...
Before Middle-earth.
Right. Well, no, Middle-earth was around, but he was, like, captured...
Before Middle-earth was in the Silmarillion.
Right. Yeah. And so he's in Valinor, and he, he was, like, imprisoned, but then basically Manwë let him out on good behavior on house arrest. Which is like, I don't know, we'll get into that decision because it was ridiculous. uh-huh. But so he obviously escapes. And so then he goes and recruits this evil spider. And so together they like sneak back into Valinor. They kill the two trees and then they steal the Silmarils. And so it's kind of ironic that it's like, well, now there's like a guy and a girl coming in and sneakily doing the same thing to you. I mean, they only get one Silmaril instead of all three. But I mean, it's still quite the mm-hmm. accomplishment. And that's still, you know... quite the diss on you. And if you know who Morgoth is too, it's just like to be face to face with this guy was just crazy. Like they went all the way up to him and made him fall asleep and literally like stared at his face, took the most precious jewel out of his crown, and then just got out. Like not scot-free because Brynn obviously got his hand bit off, but
right.
You know, that's pretty amazing. Minor knocks against it, like I was talking about in the last episode with the duplication stuff, that's kind of going on mm-hmm. here again. It's like, okay, Brynn just got shot by an arrow and had to be healed like two pages ago, and now all of a sudden this is happening again, you know? Like, mm-hmm. and it's mm-hmm. basically like almost the same sequence, you know? It's like, it's the same spot, Juan's there, Luthien's healing him, you know? I mean, it's like, yeah, we've done this before, you know? So it's like,
right.
I mean,
right.
If it could have been condensed, that probably would have been more ideal, not just because it would save us time as we cover the story.
Yeah, I mean, even within this little segment that we read, they kind of put Karkaroth to sleep and slip past him, and then shortly thereafter, they put Morgoth to sleep.
Right.
And all of Angband.
Yeah.
So
he had like a dozen different versions of the story, so who knows if he was ever like completely satisfied or what he was ever going to change, you know? Like we said before, they've come a long way since Tel-Vito and the Prince of Cats, you know, which Sauron was a giant cat, and oh my gosh, they're so far beyond that, which is thank God.
You know? Yes.
So, Brynn's healed up. They chill back in those woods for a while. So this is, I think, what, the third honeymoon? You know, where they, like, just spend the time together in the woods, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
But at this point, Brynn, he's basically ready to go confront Thingol in his oath. Because even though Thingol's not a fan of him by any means. And he doesn't have much love for Thingol, but he still respects, like, the father caring about a daughter, and so he doesn't want to just like keep Luthien from him forever, like living kind of like the outlaw life in the woods or the cowboy life
right.
in the woods.
He doesn't want to elope.
Right.
He wants Thingol's permission at the end of the day.
Yeah. And so they pass into Doriath, leading Luthien home. So their doom willed it.
Mm.
They get to Doriath, and all of Doriath has been grieving since Luthien left, including that really the minstrel that sold him out, Dairon, he was the one that like told Thingol about Luthien and Brynn originally. And he was like the greatest minstrel that's ever been known in Middle Earth, even better than Maglor, who's the son of Fëanor. And he had just left Doriath permanently and went east, like somewhere, and was lost to history, basically. And meanwhile, Thingol had last heard that from Celegorm that Finrod was dead, Brynn was dead, apparently. And Luthien was going to marry Celegorm and Nargothrond. And so Thingol, you know, this is the last word he heard. And so he was pissed at this. And so he was ready to go to war with Nargothrond. Because, like we were saying before, there's a bunch of conflicts going on that were just dropped right in the middle of in this story, you know, like family feuds and everything. And so the Sons of Feanor had made a bunch of enemies, chiefly Thingol in the past. So to then have one of them say, like, yeah, we're going to force your daughter to marry me, and then you're just going to have to like it. He was pissed, and he wanted to go to war with them. But mm-hmm. he knew he didn't have the strength to take on all seven at once, which was the problem. So he's just like, okay. I don't know, what should we do? And finally, on top of that, the worst problem of all, Karkaroth had came out of the north, and he was running mad around Doriath.
Nothing hindered him, and the might of Melian upon the borders of the land stayed him not, for fate drove him, and the power of the Cimmeril that he bore to his torment. Thus he burst into the inviolate woods of Doriath, and all fled away in fear.
And then, in that same dark hour, Beren and Luthien returned.
Then Beren led Luthien before the throne of Thingol her father, and he looked in wonder upon Beren, whom he had thought dead, but he loved him not, because of the woes that he had brought upon Doriath. But Beren knelt before him and said, I return according to my word. I am come now to claim my own. And Thingol answered, What of your quest, and of your vow? But Beren said, It is fulfilled. Even now a Cimmeril is in my hand. Then Thingol said, Show it to me. And Beren put forth his left hand, slowly opening its fingers, but it was empty. Then he held up his right arm, and from that hour he named himself Kamlost, the empty-handed. Then Thingol's mood was softened, and Beren sat before his throne upon the left, and Luthien upon the right, and they told all the tale of the quest, while all there listened and were filled with amazement. And it seemed to Thingol that this man was unlike all other mortal men, and among the great in Arda, and the love of Luthien a thing new and strange. And he perceived that their doom might not be withstood by any power of the world. Therefore, at last, he yielded his will, and Beren took the hand of Luthien before the throne of her father.
Okay, let's stop and just let's discuss here, because this is a small chunk, but this is a good part.
Yes.
Total reversal of the beginning of the story, right? Thingol instantly comes around when he sees just the, basically the maimed hand of Beren.
Right. In some ways, it's the reaction you might expect. This guy might have been kind of obnoxious and a little bit of a hard ass to Luthien's boyfriend. But at the end of the day, he's like, wow, these guys actually survived. They came back. I thought my daughter was dead. She's alive. And this guy actually did get a Cimmeril off the crown of Morgoth, which is amazing.
Right. Well, so he comes back, and it's, of course, like, the most ironic way possible. It's like, okay, he's legally achieved what he set out to do. There's a Cimmeril in his hand, but it's, like, it's clearly not done in the spirit of it, because it's like, well,
right,
Thingol can't have it.
It's, you know? It's the sort of tongue-in-cheek way you see in some of the old stories sometimes, where it's like, it was in my hand.
Right, yeah. But it's also good, because it's just like, well, Thingol's also appreciating Beren before he just gets, like, the dowry itself, you know? And it's like...
Right.
And this is also true, too. This is actually, like, a nod. This might be a nod to World War One, where, like, all these guys were coming back from the war, and they had, like, maimed arms and, you know, like, lots of, like, limbs missing and everything, like, permanent injuries, mm-hmm. you know? And so John Garth says, It is a lesson in true value. Instead of the bride price, Beren delivers proof of immeasurable courage and love. So, I mean, it's like, yeah, I mean, and Thingol even recognizes this himself. It's just like, okay, this guy's legit.
Right. Yeah, in some ways, like we were saying, it was a bit greedy or materialistic for Thingol to put the bride price for his beautiful daughter as just a gem. You know, at the end of the day, it's just a gem.
Right.
Beren calls him out on it, and maybe now he's kind of come to terms with Beren, even though he hasn't fulfilled his task to the spirit of the task, he has followed through on basically the courage that it demanded.
Yeah.
And he hasn't provided the material proof, and Thingol's maybe accepting that.
And Thingol, you know, Thingol was probably just doing it completely out of lust, like he just wanted the jewel, and more so just to off Beren. But now he is impressed, and it's like, wow, you did prove not only, like, loyalty to my daughter, but, like, courage and everything. And it's like, yeah, you would, mm-hmm. obviously, you'd make, like, a good protector and a good husband, you know, which is good.
Right, right.
But the quest isn't done. Beren knows this. Legally, it was achieved, but, you know, this isn't it. Karkaroth, he's now in Doriath. This is a problem. And the Silmaril is just driving him on. And so Beren knows, okay, we got to finish this off.
Yeah. Karkaroth is a bull in a china shop right now. Therefore, since daily Karkaroth drew nearer to Menegroth, they prepared the hunting of the wolf, and all pursuits of beasts whereof tales tell the most perilous. To that chase went Juan the Hound of Valinor, and Mabelung the Heavy Hand, and Beleg Strongbow, and Beren Ercamion, and Thingol King of Doriath. They rode forth in the morning and passed over the river Escalund. But Luthien remained behind at the gates of Menegroth. A dark shadow fell upon her, and it seemed to her that the sun had sickened and turned black.
All right, so we got the epic hunt to go. This definitely feels like something I like mythology, like, you know, go on the hunt for like the big prey or whatever. And so this is probably the most epic hunt of all time. All right, so the four of them go out. The Beleg and Mabelung are just. If you read the whole Silmarillion, you're just going to see them throughout. They're Thingol's best men. And so it's like they're good companions to have too here. And then Juan's with them as well. I think that said that, right? Well, anyways, yeah, it did. Okay, Juan's with them. Okay, so they find Karkaroth in this dark valley, but Karkaroth has like just enough control to hide himself as soon as he knows that they're near. But then eventually the final confrontation happens.
Beren stood beside Thingol. And suddenly they were aware that Juan had left their side. Then a great bang awoke in the thicket, for Juan, becoming impatient and desiring to look upon this wolf, had gone in alone to dislodge him. But Karkaroth avoided him, and bursting from the thorns, leaped suddenly upon Thingol. Swiftly Beren strode before him with a spear, but Karkaroth swept it aside and felled him, biting at his breast. In that moment, Juan leapt from the thicket upon the back of the wolf, and they fell together, fighting bitterly. And no battle of wolf and hound has seen like to it, for in the bang of Juan was heard the voice of the horns of Orome, and the wrath of the Valar. But in the howls of Karkaroth was the hate of Morgoth, and malice crueler than teeth of steel. And the rocks were rent by their clamor, and fell from on high, and choked the falls of Elsgalduin. There they fought to the death. But Thingol gave no heed, for he knelt by Beren, seeing that he was sorely hurt. Juan, in that hour, slew Karkaroth. But there in the woven woods of Doriath, his own doom, long spoken, was fulfilled, and he was wounded mortally, and the venom of Morgoth entered into him. Then he came, falling beside Beren, spoke for the third time with words, and he bade Beren farewell before he died. Beren spoke not, but laid his hand upon the head of the hound, and so they parted.
Great fight, though. Sad ending. Great fight. That, like, especially the lines there. In the baying of Juan was heard the voices and the horns of Orome and the wrath of the Valar. I mean, it's just, like, epic descriptions. Versus Karkaroth, who had the hate of Morgoth and malice crueler than the teeth of steel. I love those lines. You know, after this, Beren's on his deathbed, Juan's dead, and so then the King's Knights, this is Mabelung, he cuts open the belly of Karkaroth.
And within he was well nigh, all consumed as with a fire. But the hand of Beren that held the jewel was yet incorrupt. And when Mabelung reached forth to touch it, the hand was no more, and the simril lay there unveiled, and the light of it filled the shadows of the forest all about them. Then quickly and in fear, Mabelung took it and set it in Beren's living hand, and Beren was aroused by the touch of the simril, and held it aloft, and bade Thingol receive it. "Now is the quest achieved," he said, "and my doom full wrought," and he spoke no more.
So now we finally do have the end of the quest.
Yeah, I mean, wow.
Yeah.
We know for a fact that Karkaroth was the greatest wolf ever to live, because that was Juan's fate.
Correct.
Was to be killed at the jaws of the greatest wolf.
Not just Juan's fate, Juan's doom.
Juan's doom, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. What do we think of all this doom stuff that we've been hearing about? Because Bryn, his last words there, he says, "And now my doom is full wrought." Quest is achieved, my doom's full wrought. So do you think, like...
Has Beren mentioned before his doom being tied to Simrel? He hasn't talked about his own doom, right? We've just heard...
Yeah, but we've been hearing the whole story say, like, everybody's intertwined in his doom, Luthien's doom, Juan's doom, the doom that's surrounded by the Silmarils. I mean, it's like, what do we make of it?
Heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Dangerous. I mean, it's like you don't want to... If you, it seems like if you go after any of these things, like you fight for any of these, the like committing yourself to finding the jewel or falling in love with one of these characters is a dangerous act.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Obviously, you know, it's like, dude, yeah, it's so many deaths. Like, I mean, this has been the happy story, and there's been a lot of deaths. Like, Beren's dad and friends all died. Finrod died. Juan's now died. You know, Beren himself is dying and probably about to die. I mean, it's just like, what? Damn. Like, this is heavy, you know?
And these are epic deaths, right? These are big, important people.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I kind of wanted to focus on doom and fate for this one as opposed to, like, the other major themes. Because, I mean, death's a major theme and death's been in the story, but it's just, like, the doom associated with this. It's like, all right, they were... Was it just like prophecy of something that would happen, or is this something that had to like really be fulfilled, or is it something that just like struck them at the end? It's just like, oh, they were saying like there was going to be a doom coming and it just happened finally, or was it like this is like the culmination, this is what it was leading up to, you know? And now it's like, now that everything's tidied up, it's and it's achieved, it's like, okay, now the doom is fully done, you know?
It feels a little bit like it's some sort of clockwork. The characters certainly have free will here, but the doom that was upon them was like sort of ticking away, and it was basically predestined that Juan was gonna die after killing Karkaroth, and Beren was gonna, you know, regardless of how Karkaroth jumped out of the woods to threaten Thingol or whatever, Beren's gonna die as part of this. But you know, it feels like it was. Like, all the pieces fell into place. Like, this is... It's not, like, taking down the list of everybody that's doomed as a result of the previous parts of the story.
It's, I don't know. Heavy stuff. Should we find out the ending?
Yes, I'd say so.
So they got a stretcher for the dying Beren, and they brought Juan, too, because, you know, he's got to be honored. Luthien meets them coming on their way back to Menegroth.
There she set her arms about Beren and kissed him, bidding him await her beyond the western sea. And he looked upon her eyes ere the spirit left him. But the starlight was quenched, and darkness had fallen, even upon Luthien Chenuvial. Thus ended the quest of the Cimmeril, but the lay of Laethien, released from bondage, does not end.
And Clifford, I know it's a bit, but why don't you take us home?
Okay.
Sorry about this.
Okay, let's see. Where's the start?
So Beren just, he died there.
Okay.
She's dead. That's dead.
In case you were unsure.
Yeah.
Okay, should I read all the way through?
I think so. If we have to cut it, I'll cut it.
For the spirit of Beren, at her bidding, tarried in the halls of Mandos, unwilling to leave the world, until Luthien came to say her last farewell upon the dim shores of the outer sea, whence men that die set out never to return. But the spirit of Luthien fell down into darkness, and at last it fled, and her body lay like a flower that is suddenly cut off and lies for a while unwithered on the grass.
Okay, let me actually, like, let's just interrupt here. So this is like... This is, I don't know, people are always confused with this whole story too, but what you have to remember, we were talking about the Halls of Mandos in the last episode, and how, actually no, we were talking about it in the Glorfindel part of chapter 12, how he was sent back after he had died, you know, you remember that?
Okay, right.
And so like I said there, elves, there's some sort of like semi-reincarnation that Tolkien always played with elves. But I don't think he ever fully fleshed out the thing. But anyways, elves, when they die, they go to the Halls of Mandos and they kind of just chill out there. And, like, I don't know if they quite have their whole body, but they like, I don't know, their soul's clearly there and, like, just dwelling. And it can be communicated with. But men, die and they go somewhere else beyond the universe. Like, this is like, this is part of we'll get into this at some point, but this is like the gift of Iluvatar. It's just like elves, okay, it's like they're immortal and they're bound to the earth, but men, they feel rushed because, you know, they have one lifespan, like 100 years, and then they go somewhere else, and like nobody knows where that is except Manwë and Mandos. They both know, but nobody else does.
But the point is, it's more definitive,
right? And it's more, yeah, it's more final. But what it's saying here is Beren's soul refused to leave because Lúthien on his deathbed said, hey, you wait for me, like do not go past there, you know, like, because then it's final. Meanwhile, at the same time, after this happens, Lúthien just basically kind of dies of heartbreak. Like, she literally dies, like, right there, you know? That's what it's talking about.
Yeah, the spirit of Lúthien fell down into darkness.
Right.
And at the last it fled, and her body lay like a flower.
Yeah. So I think with that in mind, now I think we're ready. Take us home.
Then a winter, as it were, the hoar age of mortal men, fell upon Thingol. But Lúthien came to the halls of Mandos. Where are the appointed places of Eldali? Beyond the mansions of the west, upon the confines of the world. There, those that wait sit in the shadow of their thought. But her beauty was more than their beauty, and her sorrow deeper than their sorrows. And she knelt before Mandos and sang to him. The song of Lúthien before Mandos was the song most fair that ever in words was woven, and the song most sorrowful that ever the world shall ever hear. Unchanged, imperishable, it is sung still in Valinor, beyond the hearing of the world, and the listening the Valar grieved. For Lúthien wove two themes of words, of the sorrow of the Eldar and of the grief of men, of the two kindreds that were made by Iluvatar to dwell in Arda, the kingdom of Earth amid the innumerable stars. And as she knelt before him, her tears fell upon his feet like rain upon stones, and Mandos was moved to pity, who never before was so moved, nor has been since. Therefore he summoned Beren, and even as Lúthien had spoken in the hour of his death, they met again before the western sea. But Mandos had no power to withhold the spirits of men that were dead within the confines of the world, after their time of waiting, nor could he change the fates of the children of Iluvatar. He went therefore to Manwë, lord of the Valar, who governed the world under the hand of Iluvatar. And Manwë sought counsel in his inmost thought, where the will of Iluvatar was revealed. These were the choices that he gave to Lúthien. Because of her labors and her sorrow, she could be released from Mandos and go to Valimar, there to dwell until the world's end among the Valar, forgetting all griefs that her life had ever known. Thither Beren could not come, for it was not permitted to the Valar to withhold death from him, which is the gift of Iluvatar to men. But the other choice was this, that she might return to Middle-earth and take with her Beren, there to dwell again, but without certitude of life or joy. Then she would become mortal, land subject to a second death, even as he, and ere long she would leave the world forever, and her beauty become only a memory and song. This doom she chose, forsaking the blessed realm, and putting aside all claim to kinship with those that dwell there, that thus whatever grief might lie in wait, the fates of Beren and Lúthien might be joined, and their paths lead together beyond the confines of the world. So it was that alone of the elderly she has died indeed, and left the world long ago. Yet in her choice the two kindreds have been joined, and she is the forerunner of many in whom the Eldar see yet, though all the world is changed, the likeness of Lúthien the Beloved, whom they have lost.
Oh. Whoa. Whoa.
So, a lot going on there. I was going to say, well, I mean, a whole lot to unpack. That's a very dense and epic ending to an epic story.
I know, that's why we had to, like, truck through it. There's no point to just kind of summarize that, you know, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
Well, okay, so in layperson's terms, just so we make sure everyone's on the same page, what just happened there?
So, Lúthien dies of grief, and so, like, if you die, you show up in the Halls of the Dead, which this Mandos guy is, like, the Valar of.
If you're an elf and you die.
Right, well, the men go through there, but then to somewhere else with finality to never come back. But Beren,
the elves hang out there.
Right, but Beren's spirit was holding out, because he was like, I'm waiting for Lúthien, like, hold up. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so Lúthien gets there, and she sings a song to Mandos, like, asking and begging for for Beren back, and Mandos is just moved beyond pity, like he's never has been before and never will be again. And so he's like, well, I can't quite take, you know,
Beren. He's the god of death, right?
Yeah. More or less. Like the Undertaker god, you know?
Yeah.
And so he's like, well, Beren's died, and so like we can't really take that away from him. So I'm going to have to consult Iluvatar.
Because the death of a man is the gift of Iluvatar, right?
Right, yeah, which we haven't talked about. We haven't talked
about. That alone is a lot to talk about. But yeah. It's the right of men to die, whereas the elves have to live forever.
Right. And so Mandos, he's moved by pity, but it's still just like, all right, well, you know, this is too big for me to judge. So he has to go and consult Iluvatar about this. Like, well, what are we supposed to do here? Because, you know, Luthien wants to be with them. And so then after consultation, Mandos gets to the point where he's just like, okay, here's the deal. Luthien, you can either stay here in Valinor and live in Valinor with the rest of the elves, and, you know, you'll forget all your griefs and everything, or we're going to let Beren come back and you come back, but you yourself, the immortal elf, will take on a mortal life, just like Beren has, and you guys get one lifetime together back in Middle-earth, and that's it. And so then she does choose that. That's seemingly the end of the story. That's pretty epic. Pretty epic.
She becomes the only of the Eldar. Alone of the elderly, that's of all the elves, she has died and left the world.
Like the men's sense of died, like out of here.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So yeah, that's a ton. It's not quite the actual end of the story, but like, I mean, I don't know. Let's talk about this a little bit. This goes back to the theme we talked about at the end of The Hobbit. We talked about it a little bit in Chapter 12, the eucatastrophe stuff, like the sudden good turn of events. You know, it's like, all right, you know, like there was one where it's like, okay, they actually got the Silmaril. So there's a point right there. But then it's also like Beren is dead, you know, and it's like this sounds like, you know, this was an awesome story, but it's got like a sad ending, you know, typical Silmarillion. But not quite, because Luthien goes and she moves a god to like allow them to have, instead of just living in a mortal life forever, she decides to spend one mortal life with this guy, which is sweet. You know, again, like that's, you must really love him if you're going to do that. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, of all the amazing things that Luthien has done so far in this story, we've got the description of her singing before the gods. The song of Luthien before Mandos was the song most fair that ever in words was woven, and the song most sorrowful that ever the world shall ever hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the gods are moved to tears by her singing.
Right. Now, it's notable to say, this might be like somewhat of a knock against the story, but not really, because it's just like Tolkien himself realizes, just like, okay, this is beyond attempting. Like, there's no way I can even like try to put this into words, because it's like, you know, based off that description, right. Like, how are you gonna do this? You know,
yeah, better say that this has been lost to the lost to history.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, you know, even then though, if he was even writing the lays, it's like maybe they still wouldn't attempt it, because it's like this is just too big, you know.
Right. I was going to say, on this broader concept of how death works for men and elves, it is pretty interesting that we've got the gift of Iluvatar is men dying. Like, they're kind of freed for immortality is the implication. And yet there's the concept of the elves have the Blessed Realm. Like, Luthien forsakes the Blessed Realm when she chooses to become mortal. So in some ways, it's like the elves and men both have their own like sacred privilege or something in the way that they die, even though it's sort of the opposite or very different. And it's like tragic for them to veer into a different way of dying, if you know what I mean.
What kind of strikes me as you're saying that is just like Luthien's basically saying like, there's more to life than life. You know?
Yeah.
Like, there's more to life than just being alive, you know? It's like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather, I don't know, I guess love this person for just, you know, a couple decades and be content and then just go on.
Yeah, or perhaps the implication is,
and then, or just,
nobody knows where men's souls are going, but she knows that she'll be going there with him.
Right, yeah, so she moves on to the, she forsakes, you know, the privilege of the elves and chooses the men's, basically as like a side effect of being with Beren, almost.
Right. Right.
Which, yeah, interesting. This isn't quite the end, though. I think this is probably the end of what she read, right? Because, funny enough, like, I don't know why, but the very next chapter starts with a paragraph, a quick paragraph of what they actually go on to do. So I'll just read that now.
Okay.
It is said that Beren and Luthien returned to the northern lands of Middle-earth and dwelt together for a time as living man and woman, and they took up again their mortal form in Doriath. Those that saw them were both glad and fearful. And Luthien went to Menegroth and healed the winter of Thingol with the touch of her hand. But Melian looked in her eyes and read the doom that was written there and turned away, for she knew that a parting beyond the end of the world had come between them, and no grief of loss has been heavier than the grief of Melian the Maia in that hour. Then Brynn and Luthien went forth alone, fearing neither thirst nor hunger. And they passed beyond the river Gelion into Osiriand, and dwelt there in Tol Galen, the Green Isle, in the midst of Erdurand, until all tidings of them ceased. The elder afterwards called the country Dor Fyrin y Gwynar, the land of the dead that live. And there was born Dior Arunel, the beautiful, who is after known as Dior Eloquil, which is Thingol's heir. No mortal man spoke ever again with Beren, son of Barahir, and none saw Beren or Luthien leave the world, or marked the place where at last their bodies lay. So, that is kind of like, so that's like a little insight into kind of what they went on to do, and, you know, so they have a kid, which is good, and he's going to be the heir to Thingol of all of Doriath, which is cool too.
Yeah, yeah. And then they kind of die in mystery.
Yeah, it sounds like they live happily ever after.
I know the whole story, though, and they do a little bit more, but maybe we'll talk about it at some other point.
Okay.
But, basically happily ever after, so which is cool. But, yeah, but they die in mystery, and in the original versions, it was actually Luthien dies first, and it was... Okay, this isn't that much of a spoiler because we have already talked about this in The Hobbit. If you listen to our Hobbit, I think it's chapter 9 because we talk about the elves. Chapter 9, we talked about how the elves and the dwarves feud starts. And the feud starts because they start fighting over the Silmaril that Thingol has. Okay?
Okay.
And that's what gets Thingol killed. Okay? And so then from there, the Silmaril then passes back to Beren and Luthien. And Luthien ends up wearing it. And she, wearing it just like kind of as like a jewel or whatever, like, you know, as jewelry. And so that actually shortens her life because it's so beautiful that it like kills mortals quickly, you know, because she's a mortal.
Whoa,
now.
Okay. Yeah.
And so then, so that's the, that actually ends their life quicker. And then like the original drafts had like Beren like sadly like looking for her in the woods, like, but never finding her because she'd obviously passed away at this point.
Interesting, which is like a throwback to how they met originally.
Right, but with like a kind of sad end. But then again, not too sad because it's like, well, they'll still, wherever they're going, they're going to be together in like the next life, which is good.
Right.
And they fully knew what they were doing when they chose this life. So I don't know. It all reminds me, of course, of, like we said, this story is based on the scene where they met in the forest of Doriath after Brynda made the terrible journey from like the creepy land where like it almost sounded like a nuclear like war zone where like Sauron and Melian's magic was crashing into each other and he was crossing it, and then he comes to Doriath and then he's all of a sudden seeing Luthien. That was of course the inspiration. And of course we were saying the last time that's based off Tolkien and Edith's relationship. Looking at that and then comparing it to Tolkien and Edith's marriage, you know, the end of the story, and comparing it to Tolkien and Edith's, their marriage wasn't perfect. Like, Edith, she was actually pretty uncomfortable with Oxford life because she was intimidated by all of Tolkien's highly intellectual friends. So she kind of felt alienated for, like, a lot of her adult years because, like, she didn't make friends easily because the Oxford community was just, there was too many bigwigs, you know.
Too uppity.
Right. She also never even particularly liked C.S. Lewis that much, and she always thought he took up too much of his husband's time because, like, they were boys, you know.
You know? Yeah.
Like, boys club, and it's like, oh, great, you know. There goes that. But nevertheless, they always had a foundation in raising their kids, which was always really important to them because they were actually both orphans. And so it's like, well, we really want to get this right because we didn't have this, you know. And I'd say by all accounts, they succeed in that because they raised like 4 kids, and then they all had tons of grandchildren, and they had stuff to be proud of all of them. And then in their last decades, Edith became like super frail, but Tolkien dutifully took care of her. And when she passed away, on her grave, he put the name Luthien. and you can go to Oxford and see this today. Like, inscribed on there is Luthien. You know, this was a story I've been working on for literally 50 years, and throughout all that time, you never forgot the roots, that it's like, yeah, Edith is Luthien here.
Wow.
And, of course, when he passed away, obviously he, or maybe it was Christopher, you know, had Beren inscribed on his grave, too, just to have the fitting ending.
Okay. Strong.
Last thoughts? Because I think we've come to the end here, I'd say.
Phenomenal story.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
And
okay, where does this rank on love stories for you?
In general?
Sure. I don't know. Well, you decide.
Oh, man, I don't know how many epic love stories I know.
I know. This is a pretty epic one. I'd say this might take the cake for best fictional love story I've ever heard.
Is there a comparable love story anywhere else in Lord of the Rings or the Silmarillion? There's not really that many like love stories.
Well, Tur and Indril is pretty, well, I don't know, they don't really go into that story itself, but it's like there's relationships throughout it, but yeah, this is the best you're gonna get in the Silmarillion for sure, and Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
Like directly, like obviously, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that's in the background of like other stuff going on. This is like the focus of this one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd say this is best fictional one I've ever heard.
What's the best non-fictional one?
Well, that's actually the theme. Non-fictional ones, there's like a couple, but like the theme throughout all of those is like somebody actually literally does die for the other person, you know, and they did that here in this story. Now, this is just cool because they actually came back too, whereas, you know, like mm-hmm. the real life ones is like, okay, they weren't Jesus or Lazarus, so they're not coming back to life, but, you know.
Right.
Which makes it powerful, but yeah. I don't know. You got anything, or should we just leave it?
I don't have anything.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope everybody liked this. I don't know. Hopefully it was good. this was our Beren and Luthien special. So
yeah,
we got this one under our belt. Crown Jewel of the Silmarillion. I don't think you can do a Tolkien podcast without covering this story. Hopefully we did it justice. I don't know. More to come. More Silmarillion excerpts to happen. I think the next one should be the Music of the Ainur, which is basically the creation story. So get pumped for that. And I think with that, thanks for listening, everybody.
Stay tuned. Thanks, y'all.
I will tell you the tale of Tenuvial, said Strider, in brief, for it is a long tale which the end is not known. And there are none now except Elrond that remember it aright as it was told of old. He was silent for some time, and then he began not to speak, but to chant softly. The leaves were long, the grass was green, the hemlock umbels tall and fair, and in the day the light was seen of stars in shadow shimmering. Tenuvial was dancing there to music of a pipe unseen. The light of stars was in her hair and in her raiment glimmering. There Beren came from mountains cold, and lost he wandered under leaves, and where the elven river rolled, walked alone and sorrowing. He peered between the hemlock leaves, and saw in one the flowers of gold upon her mantle and her sleeves, and her hair like shadow following. Enchantment healed his weary feet that over hills were doomed to roam, and forth he hastened, strong and fleet, and grasped at moonbeams glistening. Through woven woods and elven home she lightly fled on dancing feet, and left him lonely still to roam in the silent forest, listening. He heard thereof the flying sound of feet as light as linden leaves, or music welling underground in hidden hollows quavering. Now withered lay the hemlock sheaves, and one by one with sighing sound, whispering fell the beechen leaves in the wintry woodland wavering. He sought her ever wandering far, where leaves of years were thickly strewn, by light of moon and ray of star in frosty heavens shivering. Her mantle glinted in the moon as on a hilltop high and far she danced, and at her feet was strewn a mist of silver quivering. When winter passed she came again, and her song released the sudden spring, like rising lark and falling rain and melting water bubbling. He saw the elven flowers spring about her feet and healed again. He longed by her to dance and sing of the grass untroubling. Again she fled, but swift he came, Tenuvial, Tenuvial, he called her by her elvish name, and there she halted, listening. One moment stood she, and a spell his voice laid on her. Beren came, and doom fell on Tenuvial, that in his arms lay glistening. As Beren looked into her eyes, within the shadow of her hair, the trembling starlight of the skies he saw there mirrored shimmering. Tinuviel the elven fair, immortal maiden elven wise, about him cast her shadowy hair and arms like silver glimmering. Long was the way that fate them bore o'er stony mountains cold and grey, through halls of iron and darkling door and woods of nightshade morrowless. A sundering seas between them lay, and yet at last they met once more. And long ago they passed away in the forest singing sorrowless.